For more presentations like this, visit www.xenos.org.
Well, okay, let's get started. My name is Randy Jones, and along with my friend Don Dixon, I want to welcome everybody to today's workshop on finishing well. And we thought this year's theme, My Whole Life for God, had a real strong implication that there are still opportunities to serve God in the latter half of our lives. And Don and I have been asked to talk a little bit about our experiences with that as we found ourselves in retirement. But, you know, there's a great proverb that says, the glory of the young men is their strength, but gray hair is the splendor of the old. So while my gray hair is a little more camouflaged than my friend Don's is, I am encouraged to see some gray hair out in the audience today. So the good news is, though, I think God can still use us no matter what age group or category we find ourselves in. Let me begin by saying that I'm way out of my comfort zone talking with you today about serving God, because I say this, particularly in this church, but other churches as well. I consistently see people of all ages doing a lot of remarkable acts of service through really a wide variety of different ministries. And in this church, I'm particularly amazed at the many young families, many of which even lead home groups in this church, but are raising families and in many cases holding down two jobs. It's just amazing to me how they balance that time. So my conclusion, though, is they've given that time over to God to let Him manage that aspect of their life. And I think the backdrop of what we're talking about here today, finishing well, really has to do a lot with time, how much we have, and then what we do with the time that we do have. And I read a quote about time many years ago, and it said, helps me put it in a little more perspective. And it says, time is free, but it's priceless. You can't own it, but you can use it. You can't keep it, but you can spend it. Once you've lost it, you can never get it back. So I think time is one of those huge gifts God gives all of us. And He gives us the privilege to determine how we use it. And He gives us various options and opportunities along the way to serve Him and to serve others. So today, Don and I have been asked to share with you a little bit about our ministry here at Xenos called the Finishing Well Ministry, and how God, through that ministry, has provided some opportunities for both of us to serve in our retirement years. But also, we want to spend a little more time talking to you about what we feel our purpose is in retirement with relation to serving. And Don will talk a little bit about that shortly. And also what kind of a vision that God can cast for us in the final chapters of our life. So, a little bit about the Finishing Well ministry here at Xenos. This ministry was really, the vision for the ministry was really cast by our equipping director here, Mike Sullivan. And he wanted to explore the possibilities some years back about leveraging the years of faith, the knowledge, the careers, and life experiences for the, I'll call, senior citizens of this church. So he called together a large group of those of us that have a little bit of gray hair, and we began to talk about different ways we could approach this and brainstormed a little bit and try to come up with some meaningful ways in which this age group could not only serve the church, but also in some ways influence the younger members of the church as well. It's been an exciting way for Don and I to spend some time together in this ministry, for sure. We've tried to approach this over the last several years in a couple different ways, one of which is to look at creating some new meaningful ministries that were not present in the church before, but ones that had the potential to attract volunteers to as well. One of those ministries that was developed is called the Helping Hands Ministry. Some of you might be familiar with that. This ministry meets the needs of general home repair and maintenance for a wide range of people. But generally, They are people that are 55 years of age or older, lack resources to do this type of work themselves, have special situations, and we've also added single parents to this mix as well. Right now, there are about 30 volunteers spanning all ages, both young and retired, that have a passion and a heart for this kind of a work, serving others that are unable to help themselves. We're really fortunate to have two guys that we were able to maybe talk into, but I don't think we had to talk into it too much, leading this ministry, John Urich and Ty Ganser, and they have a real passion for this kind of work. Another ministry is called the Xenos Social Services Helpline, and this particular ministry, while it hasn't created, just by nature of what it does, doesn't have the capacity for a lot of volunteers, what it does do is meet the needs of giving guidance and answering questions, not only for the older members of the church in terms of availability of social services, but also with a lot of young couples that are dealing with aging issues with parents. And it's a 24/7 hotline that people can call, leave their name and number, and somebody gets back to them within 24 hours and leads them through the maze of rules and regulations that we all encounter when we deal with social services. Some of the things they talk about or can answer questions about are things like elder care and nursing home options, health insurance, and a lot more. So we found this to meet a real need in the church. And again, just as in Helping Hands, we have two people leading this ministry. Both have backgrounds in health care, and that is Mike Berry and Cindy Howard. In addition to this, Dawn and I have been involved working with some folks in the church in developing some classes that were directed towards the older members of the church. In fact, Dawn's wife Kip has taught some of those classes. We've also been involved in hosting a few workshops for the church, brought in professionals to talk about aging issues and giving guidance from those workshops. And at various times, different departments within the church have contacted us to see if we could locate some volunteers for different duties and responsibilities that are going on here in the church. So it's been a great way to spend some of our time. We've been exposed to some really talented and gifted people in the fellowship that we probably wouldn't have met. We've learned a lot from it, so it's been a good experience. And now Don wants to talk to you a little bit about his experiences and how he sees his purpose in retirement. We got to switch this one.
Like, yeah. Do you have a monthly meeting, or do you, like, how do you get your volunteers together and then get them placed?
You mean with the ministries of existing now?
Just in general, if somebody wanted to be part of the ministry, they'd probably be given one of your names or something, and then you just ask them, well, are you interested in home repair? Like, you try to put them in one of these slots, or?
Actually, a variety of ways, and I'm glad you said that, Gene, because it slipped my mind. We do have a pass out here.
Yeah. Oh, that's right, yeah. Got to switch again.
You get a little intimate.
I was talking to Tom,
so. I do have a pass. We have a handout out here that has the contact information for Helping Hands and for Xenos Social Services Helpline. If anybody would want to volunteer and/or want to use the services, typically though, we try and do it on a quarterly basis. You'll see flyers or you'll see emails that'll come out saying, you know, we need volunteers for this, or we're looking for volunteers for that. Contact these folks. Most of the time, the ministry leaders take care of generating volunteers. Occasionally, Dawn and I are asked to help out with that as well.
Okay.
So, okay.
Well, thanks.
Yeah. Usually, there's quite a bit of information that you can see, like in the bulletins and things like that, that'll show up periodically. So,
on 4th Street, so I don't know if that makes a difference if we don't see as much stuff down there.
Well, I always wonder about that, because we're always assured that all of that stuff also hit not only 4th Street, but all the west side, so, you know, it's...
Yeah, you'll see it.
I hope it does.
Yeah. Well, I thought what I would do is just give you a little background on where I've been coming from down through the years here, and I thought I would start with that. We're going to divide this up into actually four different sections. Randy's going to speak first, I'm going to speak second, and then Randy will come back again for another section, and I'll do the last section. So this is my first section here, so we'll start with that. Just to give a little background, I grew up in Youngstown, Ohio, and I was the youngest of three kids. And I was blessed to come from a great family. My mom and dad were great. They took us regularly to a mainline denominational church that I was going up. And after high school, I graduated from Worcester College in Ohio here in 58, and then Ohio State Dental School in 62. I met my wife, Kip, who is sitting right back there, most of you know her, while at OSU, while she was studying to be a dental hygienist. Fit, real nice. So we got married on July 1st, 1961. Now, if you do the math on that, you'll realize we just had a 50th wedding anniversary, which was a wonderful time. So we got married, and off we went to begin our new life together. Now, Kip had also grown up in a mainline denominational church, and yet neither of us, as we think back, neither of us remember where we were told of the necessity of making a decision to ask Jesus to come into our heart to be our Lord and Savior. We don't remember that. And we both wanted kids, and we were very blessed to have five kids. And the master plan was to have four, but we went from four to five in just 4 minutes because the fifth one was a twin. That was before the days of ultrasound, so we had a twin there. So I thought, you know, at that point I thought, man, I'm all set. Nice family, good profession, making a good living, a home in the suburbs, everything really looked good. And I knew I should be totally content and happy, but I found myself struggling regularly with mild depression on an ongoing basis. And after several years of this, at about age 34, I realized that something was missing in my life. And I needed to find out what it was, because something wasn't right. Now, when our twins arrived, as you can imagine, Kip was under a lot of stress, five kids, eight and under. And so one time she sent one away for a Bible study that she heard about on TV. And it was through that study she learned what it meant to be a born-again Christian. And shortly after that, she asked Christ to come into her life. Well, I was standing there watching this, and for the next 2 years, I watched her life change. And she was different, more at peace, and it really impacted me during those 2 years. Sally became a Christian then too, about the same time. She was with Kip at that same time. So a couple years later, Kip invited a guest speaker to come into our church that we were attending at that time for a 5-week summer series. And her name was Martha McCallum. And a lot of you know who Martha is, of course. And she said some things that I had never heard before, like, we're not Christians just because we've gone to church all our lives or because we're church members. She said to be a Christian, there is a point in time each person has to make an individual decision on their own part to ask Christ to come into your life, come into your heart, to be your Lord and your Savior. I remember hearing that. I can still see where I'm sitting. You know, moments like that. I can still remember where I'm sitting, listening to that, and I thought, I never made a decision like that. And that really impacted me today. What she said, Martha's witness that day, really impacted me. And I believe God was drawing me that morning. Well, 6 months later, on November 20th, 1973, I went back into my private office, back into the bathroom, shut the door, knelt down on the floor, and asked Jesus to come into my heart to be my Lord and Savior. And as you know, when I got up from the floor that morning, I remember, you know, nothing, as everybody says, no flashes, no fireworks, no voices. And as I walked back down the hall that day to go back to work, I felt I felt a very strange, warm feeling in my heart. I really noticed this feeling. It was really, really, really strange. And I knew something monumental had just happened in my life. And it had. It was the best decision I ever made, bar none. No question about it. So in the ensuing years, after that, however, during my dental career, I got pretty well consumed with my dental career. And I'd leave for the office at 7:30 in the morning, get back about 6 at night, and I'd eat supper, and most evenings I would retreat to the basement, to my man cave, as Kippy started to call it, and I would spend 2 hours reading x-rays and drawing up, making up treatment plans for my patients that were in that day. So I was consumed. At that time, we had been attending here at Zenos, and I was in a home church and came on Sunday mornings and did a lot of things. But yet, however, if someone were to ask me at that point in my life what my purpose in life was, I would have said my purpose is to complete my dental career. That's my goal. I want to complete my dental career. As I was nearing retirement in 2002, I remember Kip very distinctly saying to me one night after supper, as we were getting up from the table, she said, "You know, I don't know what you're going to do in your retirement, because 90 to 95% of your time is spent in your dental life. I'm worried," she said. "I'm worried about you." Well, that was 9 years ago. And when I come back up next time, I'll tell you the rest of the story, what happened since 2002. Randy.
A little tease, just when he had you leaning in and then pulled away. Well, let me spend a few minutes talking about vision, at least my experience with it, and what role God plays in this. I think we'd all agree that God's the one that orchestrates the vision for service as we follow him. And all he asks of us is our availability and cooperation. In fact, in a letter to the Ephesians in chapter 2, Paul says that God even prepares these good works of service ahead of time for us. They're there. All we have to do is respond to them. I have several examples in my life where I believe God used both people and life experiences to really shape a vision for ministry. In some areas, I really couldn't have imagined just a few years ago. And I'd like to just talk about two of those experiences and then make a couple quick personal observations from those experiences. Several years after I made a decision to ask Christ into my life, which was back in the late 80s, I met a couple, Wayne and Rosie Talarczyk, who some of you know, who were leading a home group that my wife and I started to attend. They were really the first couple, after I became a believer, that not only talked about their faith, but their whole lifestyle was shaped around their faith. That was impressive to me. They expressed a vision for us once we got to know them to help us grow more spiritually. They encouraged us to consider becoming home group leaders and go through that process, which we ultimately did. But during that whole time, I was kind of similar to Don. I was wrapped up in a career that I thoroughly enjoyed. I loved what I was doing, you know. I would tell anybody it's the best job anybody could hope for, as a matter of fact. That's how much I enjoyed my career. But out of the blue one day came word that the company decided to sell. So after 30 years, I found myself in a situation where I could retire far earlier than I could have dreamed. I decided to kind of talk to Wayne a little bit about this, see what his take was, and we talked for a while, and Wayne turned to me and he said, he liked to use this term, he said, "I don't want to sound super spiritual, He says, but you know, you might want to consider that in some way, even a small way, God might be behind some of these events that just happened, and you might be on the edge of having a considerable amount of time to grow more spiritually and to be able to be used by God in ways that you can't imagine. Well, I think I kind of thought he was being super spiritual with that. But nonetheless, I ended up retiring. And that's really set in motion, as I look back. That was back in 1998. That set in motion an exciting and adventurous journey. One that had a number of rewards involved with it, personally. But more so, I have to say, continues to be a pattern of God knocking me down and then pulling me back up. You know, it's been a real time of being shaped, taking a hard look at the many character flaws I have, and then seeing what God can do with that, and witnessing, if I'm cooperative, what he can do with that. But since retirement, he continues to reveal a lot of opportunities. Some I respond to, admittedly some I don't. But there's two key experiences that I wanted to just take a few minutes and share with you today a little bit. One of them occurred several years ago. We were invited to take a short-term mission trip to Cambodia, of all places. But we had supported some of our missionaries in Cambodia for a few years. One couple in particular, Tim and Margie Benedum. Tim was a physician and took his wife and family to Cambodia almost 10 years ago. He operated a small medical clinic, used his profession, his skills as a doctor, to meet really an overwhelming need of medical care for the poor, but also used that to have an opportunity to share the good news of Jesus Christ with many, many, many people. So I have to admit, when that invitation presented itself, I thought to myself, wow, it'd be great to see Tim and Margie and some of the other missionaries over there. It'll be good to see the clinic, see what the work they're doing, see how God's using them. But I had an ulterior motive as well. Back in the mid-60s, I was drafted into the Army, and I spent a year in Vietnam. And I knew we would be going to some places very close to the border. And I also knew Vietnam and Cambodia are almost identical in many, many ways. So that was intriguing to me, to be able to go back there after 40 years and kind of reminisce a little bit. So we took off with a group and went to Cambodia. What a trip. Long trip, that is. One day, Tim and Margie got our group together, along with some other missionaries from World Team, took us out into a small village 15 miles from the border of Vietnam. And Tim got out with all his medical gear and several of his assistants and the villagers. He had been to this village before. Gave him access to a little hut, and he set up shop, and the villagers lined up with their children and their babies, and he began to take care of their physical needs. At the same time, some of the other World Team missionaries put on a presentation for the villagers about very small devices that purify water, because one of the big health concerns in that third world country, as it is in most, is the lack of clean water and the sickness and disease that it caused. Well, I was just amazed. I mean, there was all kinds of activity going on. Kids, you know, naked kids running around, these huts everywhere. And my wife and I started kind of walking through the village, and I took her to the outskirts of the village into an old dried up rice paddy. And I turned around and I looked, and I just started to reminisce, and I said, wow, nothing's changed after 40 some years. The people look the same. The huts and shacks that they lived in look the same. The livestock everywhere. And what really grabbed me was the smells. The smells were the same, you know. And I described to my wife, you know, how many times I had, and many others had gone through villages like that, as a 19-year-old, driven by fear and really disdain for the people. And while nothing had changed in what I just said, I felt a real change. I think God gave me a different lens to look through, because I saw the poverty, I saw the lack of medical care, I saw the oppressive, fear-driven religion that permeated the people there, and I had I just had a passion all of a sudden to get more involved in this ministry. And I had a better, much better appreciation for what the missionaries do in these fields. Now, I'm not saying to get that kind of a vision, everybody needs to take a short-term mission trip, because obviously thousands support missionaries not going out to the field. But for me, God gave me a vision for that particular ministry. So when we got back to back home about a year later, a group of supporters of Cambodia got together, and what was laid out was, I thought, a somewhat unrealistic, ambitious program to build a brand new large medical facility in Cambodia called Mercy Medical Center to ramp up meeting the needs of medical care for the poor, but also ramp up the number of people that could hear the good news of Jesus Christ from these missionaries. This was a big project, you know. Third world country, corrupt government, acquiring a land, trying to find a quality builder to do this. And when I saw the amount of money that would be needed to do this, I really had some doubts. That was several years ago. But guess what God did? They're moving into the facility beginning Monday. Yeah. So, through that experience, you know, he gave me and my wife both a little bird's eye view of just how powerful he is. You know, I mean, he gave me evidence that was amazing, you know, that I knew that his hand was all over this. So that got me involved in a ministry that I probably wouldn't have. And the second one I want to share with you is we had some neighbors we'd known for many years. In fact, at one point they were part of our home church group. And unfortunately, the husband died. This was about 5-6 years ago. And I was talking to the wife one day. They had since started going to a different church. And she began to tell me about a program the church had called Grief Share. And Grief Share is a program that a lot of churches have. It's a biblically based approach towards dealing with grief as a result of the loss of a loved one. And after talking to her, I thought, you know, this is a pretty big church here, Zenos, and we don't have one. So I got together with Don, and under Finishing Well, we thought it would be a good ministry to recommend to the church. So the counseling department supported it. Long story short, the Grief Share was implemented. Don and I got the fortunate experience of being the TAs in the very first Grief Share sessions several years ago. And I want to tell you that, you know, being with people that are in pain and suffering is not one of my strong suits, you know. I get hung up with what to say, how to say it, am I going to be insensitive, or, you know, whatever. I'm just not comfortable. That's a high-risk area for me. And I sat through that first session of Grief Share, and I was just overwhelmed with the sadness, you know, and the deep grief that these people were experiencing. I think the first class we had something like 25 people. So, I mean, I'm surrounded. I can't get out, you know. But I was also amazed that as the weeks went by, you could see God's Spirit begin to move through these people, meet this grief, comfort them. Relationships were built, and they began to share stories and kind of move away from this traumatic event. Well, it was during this time, about a year earlier, that our daughter was diagnosed with a rare type of cancer, about a year before this Grief Share meeting. And she was 38, married, and had three children. But at that point, we were very confident that God would intervene, and through the aggressive treatment she was going through, she would be fine. But that was not God's plan. So about a year after this grief share program that I attended, she went home to be with God. And what the results of that traumatic event, though, was that I believe that God put me in that position with grief share to help to prepare me for what was going to happen, number one. But sometime after that first grief share session and our daughter's death, my wife and I were talking, you know, how do you use something like this to honor God and to, you know, help others? And we thought, you know, maybe we ought to look into being facilitators for grief share. Maybe that's the way. And we did. And a sidebar thing, if anybody's interested, a new session is starting in September. So, but it is, as traumatic of an event that was, God used that situation to create a vision for getting involved in a new ministry that we would not have dreamed of, obviously. And I can assure you, having facilitated a few sessions, that we get as much comfort out of that as to what little we can give out to those that are there. It's just been terrific. Also, out of the death of our daughter, not only that occurred, but my wife got involved with another ministry here. In fact, Jeff is part of that ministry, Final Hope, which facilitates becoming a hospice volunteer, which she does. So, a couple quick observations from those experiences that may resonate. Paul says in 2 Corinthians that God's power is reflected in our weakness. I never quite grasped in the past what that really meant. I think what it means, at least based on my experiences, is that when we see opportunities to serve come up that are way out of our comfort zone, that we have no personal ability or talents in, those could be the times where, if we do respond to that call, we get, you know, the wonderful benefit of seeing God's power. If you're like me, the natural default is to stay in our comfort zone. And when we do that, I think what happens is, at least for me, we then rely more and more on self-confidence and less on God's confidence. I would also say in that context that, you know, while this church and many churches are full of people that have used their careers and their natural talents and occupations to be used by God, there's a lot of people that do that, and I think that's good. It's been my experience, based on what I was trained to do and what I thought my strengths were as a result of my career, those strengths actually became weaknesses. And I say that because early on I began to only look at ministries where I felt comfortable in, because of what my career was. And what I did is I put myself in a box, but I also put God in a box. And I was only willing to get involved in areas that I felt, you know, confident in. And He might have had a whole different plan for me. And the two examples I gave, I feel were a whole different plan, and way out of my comfort zone. You know. So, Gene Getz last night referred to Romans 8:28 many times, that God causes all things to work together for good for those who believe in Him, or for those who love Him. That's what happened with, I think, the death of our daughter to us. So my suggestion there would be is don't discount those life experiences, even the bad ones, that God can use to bring honor to Him. And lastly, I think we really need to be open to try many different kinds of ministries. I've mentioned some that I've gotten involved in, but I could double that number on ones I tried and I just didn't feel the passion or the heart for it. But we won't know that unless we keep trying. And I think it's a great thing to pray about, to have God show us, you know, and stir a passion for us in different ministries. And let me wrap up by saying, or by sharing really, a quote I came across by Rick Warren some time ago that I think really encapsulates this whole issue of serving, particularly in our retirement years, but at all ages. But Rick Warren says, serving the church is probably the most important and significant thing you will do in your life, because the church will outlast everything. Your job and hobbies will not go into eternity. Even nations and governments will not go into eternity. The church, the family of God, is the only thing that lasts forever. So, okay.
Thank you, Randy.
Because
you're right. We're back there again. We're back there again.
Pick it up.
Retirement, the golden years. Many people look forward to it, and so did I, you know. And I thought, all that free time to do whatever I want to do, you know, golf 2, 3, 4 times a week. Don't have to rush off to the office at 7:30 in the morning. I can get up and eat breakfast and read the paper as long as I want to. It's going to be great. So I retired, as Gene said, on 9/18/2002, after 40 years as a dentist, which was my goal. So the weekend before I retired, I think this is a God thing, I found myself sitting in a weekend seminar down at the Cove in the Billy Graham Training Center in Asheville, North Carolina. And Howard Hendricks, who probably all of us know, was speaking that weekend, and he was speaking on retiring and finishing well. Now, he said some things that really impacted me there too, and I'm going to be using about 4 of his quotes as we go through this little time together here this afternoon. And let me read you the first one here. This is the first one that got my attention. Retirement is a chance to do everything that leads to nothing. Retirement too frequently is an assignment to no man's land, producing a suddenly unemployed person without a mission. Studies consistently show that the average person dies within 7 years after retirement, and it's not uncommon for people to die within the first 2 years. Well, he certainly got my attention with that. And it got me thinking, you know, this could be a bigger life adjustment than I thought it was going to be. And I thought, what is my purpose in retirement going to be? What am I going to do? All this free time, what are my priorities going to be? So I gave a lot of thought to this and thought a lot about it for a lot of days, a lot of weeks, and I came up with 3 priorities that I was going to go for in my retirement life. And the first one was, after Howard spoke about this, was to have a definite purpose in my retirement life. And shortly after the Hendricks seminar, I was going down to a Blue Jackets hockey game with 3 other guys, and I was sitting in the back seat with another one of these guys, and he'd been retired for about 4 years, and knowing I had just retired, said to me, "What are you going to do in retirement?" And I said, "I'm going to play lots of golf, a lot of golf." And he had kind of a funny look on his face, and he thought for a minute. He said, "You know," he said, "you can't play golf all the time. That's going to get old real fast. You got to have a purpose in your life, something that's going to get you up in the morning, something you're excited about." And what got him up was he was the editor of a retirement newspaper for guys that he worked with in his business, accounting, I think it was. And that's what he was really fired up about. And then after he said that, I kind of remembered Hendricks' quote number 2. Hendricks' quote number 2 was, "The reason is clear," referring back to this idea of dying within 7 years and 2 years. He said, "The reason is clear why this is true. There are 2 lines in a person's life, the lifeline and the purpose line. When the purpose line evaporates, it's just a matter of time before the lifeline ceases." Well, I had been a Christian at this point about 29 years, and although mostly I would confess lukewarm, very lukewarm, but I had rubbed shoulders with a lot of Christians and talked to a lot of them during those years, and I was able to see a lot of very strong, committed, mature Christians who said, and I could see that their lives were very exciting and very fulfilled. So I decided to sit down one day and take a sheet of paper and make two columns. And in one column, I listed all the benefits of pursuing a more intensive relationship with God and what my life would look like if I did that. And in column number two, I wrote down all the reasons why I shouldn't do that. All this free time, boy, that could be great to have all that time to do things. And what my life would look like if I went down that road. Well, over many days and many weeks, I worked on those sheets, really poured a lot of my attention into it, and here's how it turned out. I came up with 23 very solid, compelling reasons why I should go for God, and only 8 against why I shouldn't. And I realized that as I looked at that column two, why I shouldn't go for God, I realized that I would get very passive, I would get very self-focused, and I felt I would drift aimlessly from a God-centered life. With all the arrows of my life pointed inwards, self, me, and none of the arrows pointed outwards to God and others. And I felt, as I looked at those reasons, I felt it would be a very quiet, boring, dull, hermit, non-vital type of life. Let me interject Hendricks' third quote here. Hendricks kind of referring to this kind of life where you get into this second column here. The danger is very real that we will die before we are buried. The God-centered life leads to glory. The self-centered life leads to gloom. The God-centered life provides optimism and meaning. The self-centered life provides pessimism and misery. Well, for me, it was decision time at this point, and it was really very clear. It was a no-brainer for me at this point. So I decided that the main purpose of my retirement life would be to spend a lot of my time actively pursuing my relationship with God, to learn how to love Him better and to learn how to serve Him better. Well, establishing that first priority led to the second priority. And after I made that decision, that first decision, that James 4:8 seemed to kind of flood through my mind a lot. And that says, draw near to God, and He will draw near to you. It's a promise of God's word. You do this, I'll do that. And so my second priority became spending quality time with God. I decided to have a quiet time with God every morning, reading the Word, reading His Word, His love letter to us, and talking with Him through prayer, spending time praying to Him. You know, some days I would get up, and I still get up, and I think, I got a lot of important things to do today. I got all kinds of things to do, and I'm just not sure I'm going to do that today. I may skip it today. And I do miss some days, of course. But when that happens, I start telling myself some truth. I start talking to myself. I say, Don, this is the most important thing you can do today. This is top priority. And once you do it, you are going to be so glad when you're done, be so glad you did it. Every time, that's true. Every time. And it reminds me, too, that I would remind myself that God is my power source. I've heard this analogy before where it's like an electric plug going into a wall to get the power. And that's what we need to do with our lives, too. We need to plug into our power source, our Father, our God, because He's the power that will help us to live through our lives. Another thing that helped me a lot was scripture memory. And it's kind of great, too, because I found that you can combine spiritual exercise, scripture memory, with also physical exercise. And let me tell you what I mean by that. 4 days out of every week, I get up early to exercise, and one of the things I do is ride my stationary bike for 40 minutes. Now, as you can imagine, you could get very bored if you didn't have something to occupy your mind while you're pedaling away there for 40 minutes. And I decided to use a set of memory verses, that key memory verses that I had accumulated over the years, and it takes me 40 minutes to go through those verses. Fit pretty nice. And so that's what I did. Every time I ride that bike, I would do my memory verses. Amazing how God gets that mind going too, where you just keep, remember, they just kind of keep right on going there. And having done those verses for years, you think I get bored. But I don't. Remember, this is God's supernatural word that we're talking about here. He can bring in a fresh thought every time. All I can tell you is that letting those verses go through my mind for every other day for all those years has helped me so much deal with the problems that can and do come into my life. It's an amazing thing for me to do that, to see that happen. Physical exercise has always been pretty important to me. But there's a verse that keeps this in perspective for me. 1 Timothy 4:8. We hear this a lot at our teachings. For bodily exercise is only of little profit. Not much, but a little bit. But godliness is profitable for all things, since it holds promise for the present life and also for the life to come. Pretty strong. Another thing that's helped me a lot in this area is that I've been going to a Tuesday morning Bible study group for 35 years. We started in the 70s with about, there are about 6 to 8 of us right now. We're from 4 different churches. I'm the only Xenoid there. And we spend time together, spend an hour together reading the Bible, praying together, and just sharing things together. And those guys have become very close to me in my life, as you can imagine. We're soulmates, and we always go. We really have a wonderful time. So that's been a wonderful thing too over the years too. That's helped me a lot. So then, in addition to spending quality time with God, which is number 2, my third priority was going to be reaching out and investing in the lives of other people. Now, I had read once that men, especially as they get older, they get more bitter and they get more resistant to change, and they tend to retreat more and more into isolation, or a little castle, and they watch more TV, they do the more computer more, and they get into alcohol more. That's what I was reading. Okay, so it's not like danger, watch out. And in contrast, those who develop deep relationships with their family and with other Christians and other people who are not believers yet, they seem to me to be a lot more contented and happy as I look at them. They live their lives for what matters most. And they live their lives for others. They're not stuck on self. You know, I've heard it said that we exist for the purpose of loving God and loving others. And you know, I knew it was going to be a little bit kind of a battle to resist this temptation to become more bitter and more resistant to change as I grew older. And I knew I was going to have to fight back against this. And as Randy said, get out of my comfort zone too. It's so easy to get into that zone. And out of my tendency to control my time and do only my agenda, this is what I want to do today, and that's all I want to do. And I needed to become more proactive and reaching out to others. I knew that. So one of the ways I've done that is to begin one-on-one lunches. I started out with my sons and my daughters, do that, and then Christian brothers, and then guys who don't know Christ yet. And at those lunches too, I try to get away from the idea of just talking about sports and the weather and try to get a time where we can talk about what's going on in their life, good and bad. And then, if appropriate, go to the car and we can pray together. And I also have the joy, as a lot of people, a lot of you guys do too, I have the joy of investing into the lives of people in our home church. That's a wonderful thing too, because we get very close to them too, don't we, as the years go by. We got a guy in our home church by the name of Rich, Christian brother named Rich. And he is a wonderful example to me of what it looks like to invest in the lives of others. He's an amazing guy. Rich is a retired middle school teacher. He's a retired Air Force guy, was a navigator in the Air Force, and he flew in the first Gulf War in Iraq. A few years ago, as most of you know, we had a sizable group of immigrants from Bhutan, Nepal, that started coming to Zenos here. And Rich and Darla, his wife Darla, felt a real burden for these people. And they started to take one of the families under their wing. This led to getting involved with other people, other kids, teenagers and so forth. They were both teachers. And I was talking to Rich lately, just didn't tell him I was going to talk about him at all, but I said, well, what's every typical week for you? And he said, last Sunday, he said, I got up at 7:45, went down to the place where the Nepalis live, picked a carload of Nepalis up, brought them up to church, went to the service where they had the Nepali service, the translator and so forth. And we went out to eat afterwards with a bunch of them. We went to Wendy's, and in the afternoon I tutored with them, and we went to the library for a while. The kids wanted to look something up in the library. Spent 3 hours in the library. I got home at 5:15, and that's not that untypical for him on a Sunday. Thursdays, he tutors for 3 hours with the younger people, the teenagers, the high school kids, tutors them with all the skills that he has. Drives the doctor's appointments, drives them to driver's training classes. He spent a week, just got back from a week at summer camp, the high school summer camp that they just had, and 18 Nepalis went to that. He went along with them just to be with the Nepalis, spend the time in their cabin. Nepali kids call him Uncle. And as you know, they just had a baptism service recently here, and a couple of the teenagers asked Rich to baptize him, which he did. And one of those young Nepali guys, about 20 years of age, who has a learning disability, on one of these Sunday afternoons not too long ago, Rich had just tutored him for 4 hours in the afternoon on Sunday. They got back to the house, and Rich said, well, I got to go home and go ahead and jump out of the car. I was at the kid's house, and the kid didn't want to get out of the house, and Rich kept telling me he really had to go home. And finally, the kid got out. He just didn't want to leave Rich. He was enjoying being with him so much. And as Rich was telling me all this, his eyes moistened. They teared up a little bit. He said, I really love that kid. I really love him. I said, Rich, you are an amazing guy. So it is wonderful. He spends a lot of his week helping them. And this is what it means to invest your life in others big time. He certainly has a purpose in his retirement life. No question about that. Well, kind of in conclusion here, it may sound like that after retirement, I have lived happily ever after. But as you know, you all know, that's totally unrealistic in this life. Our family has had some very difficult days in the past couple of years here. We have two sons and two son-in-laws who lost their jobs. We've had two daughters who have gone through divorces, one very contentious, which is still going on right now. And Kip, my wife, was diagnosed with cancer here a few years back also. But you know, through all this, in the last couple of years, I've discovered that a huge benefit of having a purpose in the retirement life, of going for God, is that it has also enabled me to understand God's perspective as we go through all this. That's helped very much. Heard recently a little quote I'd heard, and this I really like too. Faith and thankfulness are what gets us safely through our day. Think about that. Faith and thankfulness are what gets us safely through our day. So when we're having troubles, we think, hey, those are two pretty good things to hitch my star to. Those are really good. One more quote from Howard Hendricks. Without Jesus Christ, we have a hopeless end. But with him, we have an endless hope. That's one to attach our star to, too. So anyway, that's it for Randy and I. Now, what we would like to do next is we would like to throw it open on the floor here to any questions or comments that you might have. And if there aren't many of those, we have a couple discussion questions that we will ask here of you guys. But we would probably prefer, we would definitely prefer to have comments and questions. Jeff, Randy, get up here too. We'll share this thing.
All of us here have friends who were sitting here thinking, man, I wish so-and-so were here.
Mm-hmm.
We could hear this.
Yeah.
We have people that we love that are in our groups that we care about.
Yeah.
Who don't have this vision.
Yeah.
And I'm not asking for a magic bullet because there isn't one. But, you know, what kinds of things, I know we can model some of this here, mm-hmm. we can challenge them, we can, do you guys have any ideas on how we can help some of the folks that we know in their 50s who are coming up to us to catch this vision for themselves? I know that's a big question.
Well, I would just first of all say one thing is, you know, what helped me was to become very aware of the fact that I was approaching that and start to read up on it. There's a lot of good books out there on retirement and how to do it God's way. So that's one thing that I for me, I know I was starting to read things like that too. Randy, come on over here a little bit more.
We're gonna run out of.
Yeah, we're running out of.
I forgot we're tethered.
Get over here.
Yeah,
we're buddies, remember?
We're tethered here. So, yeah, that was good. And I think certainly consistently praying for people like that.
Ooh, yeah, that's good.
Probably the most powerful thing. But I think, too, which I can't say I'm as consistent as I'd like to be, but I try to be, and that is for folks similar to what you're describing, Jeff, as we see opportunities come up to serve, to keep encouraging them to consider it. They might say no more times than not, but nonetheless, I think that it at least sends a signal that, you know, you feel they have a lot of value and can be used by God, and here's opportunities, and, you know, hopefully someday that they'll respond to that, you know. But you're right, there's not any silver bullet, and I think modeling is a great approach. Prayer is probably the best, and then encouraging them to, you know, get more involved. So,
I think maybe too, just like with you guys, growing when you have a conversation, just a question.
Yeah.
And ask it for yourself. You know, I'm thinking through this. I know this is facing me coming up. What are you thinking about? Do you have a purpose? Or, I mean, just kind of ask them, and to get that, because that was the question that got you going.
Yeah, right.
Just to keep that question out in front of them, that this is something you need to be thinking about.
Roger, go ahead.
Well, you guys have inspired me because I wrote down a whole sudden vision about that.
Great.
And I've written 5 books.
Wow.
I like to write. There are books about cave exploring and so on, but I could teach a course on writing your life story.
Yeah.
Now,
yeah,
Christians have a life story.
Yeah.
Some of it involves Christ and how they came to Christ. Some of it involves career things. And you can benefit other people with your experience, just as you orally have done. You can leave an enduring legacy, assuming you don't burn them. Whatever you're right.
Mm-hmm.
And you can save some important truths. If Howard Hendricks had never written down the ideas he had, we would be poorer for him.
Mm-hmm.
Well, the problem is people say, well, I can't write. Well, I know that writing could be taught. I can teach it. I can do that. Next question is, who cares? Well, some of us perhaps came into this room saying, who cares?
Mm-hmm.
Not me. I caught fire from your vision and what you did about it, where, what is the value of it? Well, what was the value of David writing down his poems?
Mm-hmm.
Right. Mm-hmm. He couldn't have known what that would do for the rest of us. Matthew, Mark, Luke, John, Paul, so on. And so it would seem to me that one of the things that I might do is to try to put together a class to teach retired people
to
write their story.
Wow. We never thought about that. That's a good one. That's very good.
Your story is unique.
Yeah.
Right.
Just as the Bible writers were unique. No two of them are alike.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a way to pass God's blessing that you've received on to other people. Mm-hmm.
Good.
You can learn to write. You might go on to write a bestseller. I don't know. I think articulating your purpose and hope that you guys have done in this room in just a few minutes is really valuable. And it's going to help people you don't know.
Mm-hmm.
Now, what else are you going to leave behind? Mm-hmm. Are you going to get a piece of granite and put your name on it, stick it in the cemetery, and everybody will say, boy, there's a piece of granite.
Yeah.
Yeah. Name on it. No. And so I think what I need to do is to put together a syllabus and see if I can sell that to somebody. I don't mean for money, but I mean, I can teach people how to write their life story.
Sure.
That's great. That's wonderful. When you get that done, let us know. We'd like to read it.
Maybe we've got people here who would like to take the course, if I can get them to
sign up. Yeah, there you go. There you go.
Exactly.
That's a great idea.
Thank you. Thank you.
Anybody else have any thoughts on that? Bruce?
I have a question about Randy, about grief share. How often do you guys have those sessions? I know a couple of years ago my mom died, and I went through it with another church, and I guess I wasn't really aware that you guys were doing that.
Yeah, we right now we offer it twice a year, okay? And we would love to be able to do it as many churches do. A lot of them have a continual grief share. And what we're trying to do is encourage some other people to become facilitators so that we could have more people in the mix to facilitate those meetings. But for right now, you know, we start one in September, it runs to November, then we'll start another one in the latter part of the winter, and they run about 10 weeks. Yeah. But they're always, when we have a session, there'll be an announcement in the bulletins, there'll be emails coming out about it, and at the Welcome Center there's a schedule too as well. Yeah.
Yeah, because the demographic of my home is we're all aging, and death is becoming more common in the future, and also
right.
It's difficult because they seem to kind of come in clusters.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, really a great program. Yeah.
You know, as Randy said, what really impressed me too when we went through that for the first time was how those people bonded together over those. It was 13 weeks at that point. How
first
they
one.
Bonded together over 13 weeks. At the end of those 13 weeks, we had a dinner, the last one had a dinner together. We had so much fun, and everybody was toe together and helping each other and praying for each other. It was really something. So, yeah.
Yeah. There's always a handful, and in fact, I don't know what the count would be, but there have been several people that came into that with a friend that went to Xenos, and after the class accepted Christ. There's been a number of people that came to Grief Share sessions who weren't affiliated with a home church and have become affiliated with a home church because of a relationship that was set within that environment. Yeah. So, yeah.
I'm curious about, Lynn, as you retired, that opened probably joint ministry opportunities with your wives that you didn't have before. Can you comment a little bit on how that affected you?
Well, where it affected me, I guess, was I was able to become more serious about the home church and getting more involved. And Kippy and I were leaders in our home church, so we got to the point where we were able to get involved with the church more and more on planning, things like that, and getting, talking about the people in the home church and trying to help there. And so that would be one way I can think of that it did help too. And Randy, you got anything on that?
Yeah, I think probably 15 years ago I might have answered it differently, but the opportunity to serve with your spouse, at least for me, has been great. You know, it's gives us a mutual framework to talk about that's spiritually based. The fact that, you know, as Don and Kip do, they lead a home church. My wife and I lead a home church. And the other ministries that we're involved in, it just gives us a commonality to talk about. We're not going in two different directions. Mm-hmm. And I think it's been fantastic. I mean, I think it's been one of the best things that could have ever happened to my marriage, for sure. You know, so.
I do think finishing strong doesn't just start at retirement. So I think when you're with 50, that the most important thing is to that you're glorifying God right now,
right.
Him right now, and growing in Him right now, and getting up if it takes 5 a.m. to spend time with Him right now.
Right.
And so then.
Right.
And then hopefully you're maturing, and then as you get retirement, it's like, oh, now where can I serve?
Right.
You know, it's not as much of a
shocker. Yeah. Right.
It's more of a natural transition, you know. But I think the other side of that may be, and we hope to maybe reach a little bit of that audience if it's present, you know, in these two workshops today, is those that are, as you say, are working towards retirement. And I've talked to a number of them that are so busy with their jobs and their families and careers. What I hear from them is, well, when I'm not this busy, then I can think about serving more. And then before you know it, you're retired, and you hadn't really given, you know, God a chance to cast a vision for you and to prepare you for what your retirement, how you could be used by Him in your retirement. So, yeah, it's a. Well, I was just talking to somebody earlier, in today's economy, I don't know what that word means anymore.
Right.
You know, that's true. That's true.
Marilyn.
I just had a couple of points that I think I'll take home from this, and I think Randy said that to look for opportunities to serve that are out of your comfort zone, which I really hadn't done. I thought, well, I've done this in my job, so I can do this over here, rather than think outside the box a bit, and just let God do the work.
Right.
And, which is a kind of a scary step, just a little bit of that, but not enough. And another thing, Don, I like your idea about getting out. To me, a great day is when I don't have to go anywhere, I don't have to put on makeup, I just put on specs and just putz around the house, and I'm perfectly content to do that.
Yeah.
But then I start thinking toward, you know, towards dinner time, I haven't talked to anybody, I haven't done a thing all day. And maybe I shouldn't feel guilty, but I like your idea of setting up a couple lunches a week at least and getting out.
It is kind of a lie we tell ourselves. Oh, I need this day.
I know.
And then you do get to the end of it and feel like, this is a day that has basically been wasted. Yeah. I haven't really, you know.
And there's no question about it. How do you feel at the end of the day when you've reached out and been with somebody? In contrast to the day at home. And
tired in a good way.
Yeah.
Right.
What a difference it makes. Yeah. Yeah. Joan.
I remember Kip used to say, she had a day all planned out, and then God had something completely different for her. That's always stuck with me. And,
yeah.
I just finished reading Unexpected Adventure, which Randy recommended, by Lee Strobel and Mark Middleberg, which was really good. And it talked a lot about getting out of your comfort zone, talking to people about Christ. and your idea of going out for lunch. I try to put the two together and get out of my comfort zone.
Talking about Christ and sharing Christ with people, if you haven't taken Jeff's course, Jeff's back in the corner, on evangelism, that is a wonderful course to take. It's a three-hour class on Wednesday nights, and it is fantastic about sharing your faith. So I took it this last year, and it was really good. But, you know, I was going to comment, too. That's something that...
August 3rd.
Okay, get it in there. Very good. The other thing I was going to say was I can relate to what you said, Joan, too, because... a lot of times I get my agenda and my schedule set, and Kip is very good at saying what you just said there, that, hey, listen, maybe God has this idea for you in mind today. And then it gets me out of my past thinking like, are you?
Yeah.
Well, maybe not quite.
Yeah.
Here's what the word is. Have you ever thought of, and then...
Well, you know, I can remember some years ago on this whole issue that Joan wrote up about interruptions and how God can use those. Don and Kip's son Tom did, I remember a wonderful teaching on the whole idea in the New Testament of Jesus making plans to go from one place to another and being interrupted and what that interruption led to. That was an amazing teaching.
I think it was as he went along. It was in the scripture was as he went.
I remember that.
Something would happen, which would be one of the miracles in the Bible. You know, one of the great events. You know, and so he just went.
That could happen to us. You know, not the miracle part, maybe, but you know, yeah, maybe it could.
Okay. Anybody else? Well, listen. Thanks, you guys.
Yeah, thanks a million. It was enjoyable. Thank you.
Thank you very much for coming.
Thank you.
Okay.
This study was recorded at Xenos Christian Fellowship and is copyrighted. You may freely copy and distribute it as long as you keep it intact and do not sell it.